Welcome to History Lost in Time, from one enthusiast to others. And welcome to episode 21 of this podcast. Quick reminder, in episode 17 I talked about marriage advice of the Nazis based on a family yearbook from the late 1930s. This time I will browse through a family yearbook from 1901 and talk about what people back then thought would be useful for a German family to know.
Why this topic today?
I admit episode 17 turned out to be a lot more serious than I initially anticipated, but well, the implications were just there. This will be different in this episode. The yearbook I have is from Imperial Germany, and it doesn't try to spread some ideology, but instead targets a certain social class, upper class, middle class, and those that would like to be a part of those. And the worldview that shines through can be funny, revealing, and strange all at once.
Political background and commentary.
No agenda, I just want to talk about a historical curiosity.
The sources.
The book I own is the Illustrated Yearbook from 1901, subtitled People's Calendar, printed and published by Verlag Rudolf Mosse, Berlin. The book itself is in rather tragic condition. While the thick cover is still intact, basically all pages are loose and no longer really binded together. So this book has seen some action. This book has paperback format and is quite handy. Right at the start, one is greeted with an ad from the Hamburg America line. Quote, ocean voyage of about 6 days. The destination is New York via Southampton and Cherbourg. The next thing is a poem. The book starts with an annual calendar. On the left side you have the weekdays, the name days both for Catholics and Protestants, and then the times of the sun and moon rising and setting. On the right side, there's a box for notes and additional information that the publisher considered to be useful for the population. Among them are explanations for celestial phenomena in the sky, birthdays of the nobility, farmers' rules, and a kitchen calendar. After that, there are a couple of pages of general information like holidays per state, measurements and weight tables, and then a couple of pages regarding Germany's noble houses. Spread throughout the book you can find several poems. Here you can already see what kind of character this book has. Practical advice for everyday life, like the calendar and the measurements table, some entertainment as well as political and social information for the target group, and it's fairly easy to identify the target group. There's basically nothing for workers in this book. And farmers, except maybe super rich ones, also won't be able to get much use out of this book. Following a lengthy story, there is another section called, quote, civics, structure and garrison locations of the German army. So everyone who wants to know where which military unit was stationed in 1901, or which units were stationed within a certain area, this is the place to look it up. I'll just pick an example. Page 84, for example, lists that all units of the 4th Army Corps were stationed in Magdeburg. There you can see that Field Artillery Regiment 75 was based in Halle. This listing includes all units of the German Imperial Army as well as states' armies like the Bavarian Army or the Saxonian Army. On page 91, there is a lengthy article with the title "The Scope and Powers of Local Police Authorities." So this is again an article containing general information that could be quite useful for everyday life. Following that, there is an article talking about warranties when purchasing something. Back then, civil law was unified within the so-called Bürgerliches Gesetzbuch, and warranties were just as important back then as they are today. What is the law here was and is important to know. Following that, there is an article about the post office. What costs how much, and what kind of things can be sent via the post office. Here you can find out what postcards back then should look like, and that they needed a stamp costing a whopping 5 pfennig, or 2.5 cents. Following that, you have information articles about trade regulations and the accident insurance, so all rather useful things. On page 120, the book leaves the general information articles. Now there's an article about hobby gardening, how to build and place nesting boxes and feeding places for birds. Just like today, Germans back then enjoyed placing these in their gardens to watch birds, if one had a house. With a garden, of course. Finally, on page 128, we have the article that became the heart of this episode. When I read it, I knew I had to talk about it. The author of the article is Anna Plotoff. Now, unfortunately, I didn't find out much about her. I only know that she was a well-known women's rights activist, author, and social activist back then. However, she was never able to really hide her social origins. Her father owned a factory, and for a while she worked within the top management. I freely admit that I guess that she is writing this from the point of view of the upper class, with a tone that is a bit arrogant and patronizing. Maybe I am wrong about this. If that is the case, please let me know. But I will gladly explain why I had this impression when I read the article. Let's start with the title of the article, which is How do you organize folk entertainment evenings in the countryside? Okay, I'm a simple guy, so when I hear folk entertainment evening, no matter whether it's in the countryside or in the city, I'd say food, drink and music. The rest will develop on its own if the right people are invited. But well, according to Mrs. Plotoff, I am dead wrong here. She starts her article with the words, "There is no need to discuss anymore that popular entertainment evenings are an urgent need for our rural population." I already go to red alert when I hear that, when people start with claims that basically say everyone knows, people are aware that, or it is well established that. One should always ask, really, is it? Why don't you at least briefly try to prove this? But well, let's allow her to continue. Serious friends of the people claim that it is the monotony of rural life that forces many workers to emigrate to the city, where their longing for the joy of life can be more easily satisfied. Of course, she doesn't mention who these friends of the people are, so it might just be her making this claim. And I will freely admit that life in the city has always been more extravagant than rural life, but I would argue that poverty and desperate searches for work were the main drives to move to the cities. When you look at pictures of workers' apartments at the time, then pictures of workers' districts, and when you know the work conditions of the time, it is really hard to imagine that hundreds of thousands of people chose such an existence just to enjoy the bars and theaters. The idea that the seventh son of a farmer who had no chance of ever inheriting the farm tried his luck in a city seems more plausible to me. Mrs. Plotoff started thinking about the question of entertainment evenings after a long walk through her home state of Brandenburg. During that walk, she made a stop at a small village and obviously hoped for a touristy place. I quote, "In my mind floated many a lovely picture, framed by zither playing and singing, that I had seen on my travels in central and southern Germany. None of that was there. The place seemed deserted. Only in front of the inn, in the middle of the street, four adolescent boys sat around a table playing cards, and inside, in the room, which was populated by countless flies, a few day laborers squatted dully behind large schnapps glasses. Otherwise, there was no drink. The beer had gone sour and was undrinkable, and there was no milk. I was only able to quench my thirst outside the village at a spring. On a hill there, the school children were playing. That is, they lunged around boredly. Finally, they began to wrestle and for a change pushed each other down the slope. And that was the Sunday pastime. At the last house in the village, I knocked on the window to ask for directions. A young woman got up sleepily from her bed and told me. Disgruntled, I continued on my way. Was this a dignified existence that the people there led, as a respite after the week's work for the young wrestling and card games, and as refreshment for the old schnapps and sleep? And yet the surrounding area offered so many attractions, and the most beautiful summer day shone blue over the landscape." So, Mrs. Plotov's impression of the rural population of Brandenburg is that the youth is fighting and the elderly are sleeping or drinking. Let's keep in mind that she has the time to go on lengthy walks on a Sunday, meaning she has no responsibilities at home, or, more likely, as the daughter of a rich family, she has servants handling everything. If she had come through this village on a normal weekday, I bet she would have found most of the population working around their houses and farms. The fact that these exhausted people had to rest on Sunday seems to have eluded her. And who knows, maybe that young woman that she mentions at the end has a baby, and she didn't get any sleep last night, so she sleeps during the day. That wouldn't be something out of the ordinary. But Mrs. Plotov doesn't think about this. From her point of view, the living conditions of these people are dull and gloomy, and now she's thinking about how to entertain these people. I admit, an honorable goal, even though the way she came to that goal is, let's say, unique. So what is Mrs. Plotov suggesting? To be fair to her, she did invest a lot of work into this topic. She mentions a convention that had discussed popular entertainment that she visited in Berlin in 1897. However, it seems this convention was seriously listening towards education, because her suggestion sounds more like school than entertainment. Quote from page 129. So it's a matter of establishing popular entertainment everywhere. The task isn't as difficult as it seems as soon as some intelligent person takes the initiative. The most qualified to do this will always be the teachers, who know the people's needs well and have a connection with the youth. In other words, it's easy, just ask the teachers. Well, it might be correct that teachers have a connection with the youth, but I don't agree with Mrs. Plotov that this won't be difficult. Her first suggestion is to establish a library. There's nothing wrong with that suggestion. Reading is good for a person's education, and it can also be entertaining. But what does that have to do with folk entertainment evenings? I can't imagine that the rural population will travel to the next library after a week of hard work and relax by reading intensely. On top of that, let's be real, libraries won't be set up in every village. That's something for small cities and larger towns. So the village population would have to travel to the next larger town to reach the library, on foot or maybe by horse, because basically nobody had a car back then, and trains don't stop at every village. But, well, libraries aren't a bad idea. A few people from the mentioned village in Brandenburg might start reading instead of drinking, sleeping, or doing stupid things, if there was one. So let's just move on. Are there any more ideas? Quote, page 130. The lectures must, of course, be tailored to the listener's level of knowledge, must present the instruction in an enjoyable manner, and must not tire them out through excessive length and too many details. It will not always be easy to find the right people for this in rural areas, but where there's a will, there's a way. Among elementary school teachers, there are many who devote their leisure time to a particular passion. Lectures, instruction, Sunday work for teachers? Somehow I doubt that elementary school teachers in rural areas will be thrilled about having to do lectures for adults on Sundays after working with children from Monday to Saturday. Additionally, I also doubt that an exhausted farmer will look forward to relaxing on Sundays by listening to scientific lectures, no matter how short and interesting they may be. And don't forget that Sundays aren't automatically a rest day for farmers. Maybe such lectures might be interesting for a few. After all, the stuff I read makes other people roll their eyes, but you can't consider this to be appropriate for the majority of the population. Let's ask ourselves what people like to do today for entertainment. TV, music, sports, parties. Where are the suggestions that go into that direction? Honestly, library and lectures only cover the entertainment needs of a minority. Unfortunately, Mrs. Plotov keeps talking about education for quite a while before she finally produces a couple of different suggestions. First, she suggests something in terms of art and creativity, like painting. Well, that actually is a hobby that could motivate some people. Then there's writing poems. Okay, not my thing, but probably interesting to a couple of people. And then music, like singing in a choir. Well, finally, that's a decent suggestion. Could also be very useful for a real folk entertainment evening when the village choir can sing. In the last few lines of the article, she writes a bit about theater, sports, and gardening. So the good ideas are there, however, they are being marginalized. My personal opinion is that massive social differences of that time are colliding here. Someone from a rich home that could make a career as an author and as an activist meets hardworking people that are totally exhausted after a long week and just need a break. But instead of recognizing that, the hardworking people are confronted with accusations of being dumb and lazy, to put it bluntly. To me, that looks like a serious lack of understanding for each other. One social class doesn't know how life for the other social class really looks like. That leads to wrong assumptions and rather weird suggestions. To be fair to Mrs. Plotov, her goal is to improve living conditions of the rural population. That motivation has a rather odd basis, and her suggestions have a serious list towards education, but well, some of her suggestions sound quite good and overall they are not bad. However, my main issue with this is that it reveals how isolated social classes were living and how little they knew about each other. That may be true for all countries and all times to some extent, but well, in this case I found it to be extremely obvious, especially since her opinion regarding rural folks was so devastatingly negative. I'm not a farmer myself, but I live rural enough to see how long, how often, and without a real break farmers are working. Accusing them of being tired and exhausted at the end of a day, well, that is inappropriate, to say the least. On page 150, Mrs. Plotov explains in a second article how she thinks a party at home should be set up, an upper class party, that much is obvious. If there's interest, I can discuss this article as well in some other episode. The book continues with advice regarding vacation trips, another topic for rich people, as most people back then simply couldn't afford any vacation trips. Then there's an article for amateur photographers, again something for rich people, as most people couldn't afford cameras. And then there are more articles filled with information, first about inventions and discoveries, something really important for the age of technology enthusiasm of the early 1900s, then an article about the World Fair in Paris, and then a review of last year's events. After two articles regarding farming, there's one about new household appliances, again, only things that rich people can afford. And of course, lots of ads. If you sum up everything from these articles, it becomes obvious that the rich upper class is the target group of this book, and that explains the tone of Mrs. Plotov in her articles.
Finishing words.
As said before, should I treat Mrs. Plotov unfairly here, please let me know, but that's my impression of her article. This 1901 family year book has a lot less ideology than the one from the late 1930s. Instead, it is closely connected to a certain social class. This is a book for the rich upper class and middle class. The majority of the population wouldn't be able to get much use out of the contents of the book. It basically illustrates what they cannot have, like household appliances and vacation, and how negatively, at least partially, they are being talked about. When it comes to that, this book shows us how part of the population thought and how isolated social classes were from each other. Understanding the past is therefore a bit more indirect this time.
Thank you for your interest.